ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय Vibhajya Tanayevhya Shmam Rajashir Malayadvaja Aryadajadishu Nam Sajagama Kulachalam Vibhajya Tanaye Bhyakshmam Rajari Shirmaladvaja Aryarajyaishu Krishnam Sajagama Kulachalam Vibhajya Tanaye Bhyakshmam Rajar Shir Malaya Dvaja Aryarajyarishu Krishnam Sajagama Kulachalam Vibhajya Tanaye Bhyakshmam Raja Shir Malaya Dvaja Aryaradhya Ishu Krishnam Sajagama Kola Chalam Vibhajya, having divided, Tanayebhya, among his sons, Kshmam, the whole world, Rajarishi, the great saintly king, Malayadvaja, named Malayadvaja. Ariyaradhyadishu, desiring to worship Krishnam, Lord Krishna. Sa hi Jagama went Kulachalam Andu Kulachula. Translation. After this, the great saintly king Malayadvaj divided his entire kingdom amongst his sons. Then, in order to worship Lord Krishna with full attention, he went to a solitary place known as Kulachala. Purport. Malayadvaj, the great king, was certainly a Mahabhagavata, topmost devotee. By executing devotional service, he begot many sons and disciples for propagating the bhakti cult, Shravanam Kirtanam Vishnu. Actually, the entire world should be divided amongst such disciples. Everyone should be engaged in preaching the cult of Krishna consciousness. In other words, when disciples are grown up and are able to preach, the spiritual master should retire and sit down in a solitary place to write and execute Nirjan Bhajan. This means sitting silently in a solitary place and executing devotional service. This Nirjan Bhajan, which is the silent worship of the Supreme Lord, is not possible for a neophyte devotee. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur never advised a neophyte devotee to go to a solitary place to engage in devotional service. Indeed, he has written a song in this connection. Dushtaman tumi kisher vaishnav pratishtara tare nirjanera ghare tabahari nama kevala kaitav. My dear mind, what kind of devotee are you? Simply for cheap adoration you sit in a solitary place and pretend to chant the Hare Krishna Mahamantra. But this is all cheating. Thus Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur advocated that every devotee, under the guidance of an expert spiritual master, preach the bhakti cult, Krishna consciousness, all over the world. Only when one is mature can he sit in a solitary place and retire from preaching all over the world. Following this example, the devotees of the International Society of Krishna Consciousness now render service as preachers in various parts of the world. Now they can allow the spiritual master to retire from active preaching work. In the last stage of the spiritual master's life, the devotees of the spiritual master should take preaching activities into their own hands. In this way, the spiritual master can sit down in a solitary place and render Nirjan Bhajan. So the living entity needs to be engaged according to his natural propensities. In, of course, a pure state. We cannot expect that the impure state of our propensities, that necessarily that always has ideal engagement in the Lord's service. But these propensities to be active, to be engaged, to do various services, these kind of things are very applicable in the Lord's service. In the beginning, the devotee, he very much identifies with his conditioned nature. And so because of this conditioned nature, then one needs to engage those activities on which the living entity identifies as, let's say, a very active person or an administrator or someone who can do many, many things. Those are to be engaged because that is our identity. That's how we see ourselves. We focus more on our abilities of what we can do rather than our, how we're able to engage the mind. So we see that Srila Prabhupada was also very expert in this, engaging the devotees according to their nature. And Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur has also recommended this in this song of his, in this verse, that by performing the activities, then one becomes fully absorbed. The whole idea is the living entity must be fully absorbed. If he's not fully absorbed, it's not so progressive for his Krishna consciousness. So one has to be able to understand what is one's conditioned nature and find an engagement for all aspects of that conditioned nature. Then one is fully engaged. Otherwise, then there'll be engagements for part of one's conditioned nature and not for other parts. So then those parts will not carry the same flavor. There will be a difference in one's application in one's life. One will see a duality in one's life. Some aspects are spiritual, some aspects are material. But the devotee should be very thoughtful to see how to engage everything. And the spiritual master should be very careful to see that the disciple sees all aspects of his life, you know, whatever it may be, even if it is for taking care of material needs, but how to do that successfully in connection with Krishna. And how to, in the best way, create an environment of full absorption. In that environment, then the disciple becomes satisfied. The mind becomes fixed on Krishna. So then when the mind is fixed on Krishna for a long time, one becomes purified, then we see that at the mature stage, then if one sits for solitary bhajan, he will be fully absorbed in that bhajan. There will be no distraction. He will be sitting in one place, he'll be chanting the holy name, and his concentration will be on the holy name. Otherwise, he'll be sitting in one place, but his mind will not be in that place, it will be somewhere else. Because the whole thing, we're trying to catch the mind. The mind is the actual focus of our attention, is how to catch the mind. But since in the beginning the mind is connected to the senses, then we engage the body and senses. Then as the mind is not so absorbed in the senses, then we can engage the mind in the chanting, hearing, chanting, and remembering the various name, form, qualities, and pastimes of the Lord. Otherwise, then the mind will be absorbed in sense gratification, in different things, gross and subtle. Either the need for enjoying the senses or need for creating facility or the prestige that goes with that facility or position. Then that's what the mind will be absorbed in. So since the purpose is to get the mind not to sit in nirjan bhajan, therefore then the active service is recommended for the in the beginning stages. And as one advances, then one may or may not be engaged in so much active service because the mind is already fully engaged in Krishna service. But we see basically here, the platform of it is at a very advanced stage, so past the stage of Madhyama. Because otherwise, the Madhyama also has to deal with the conditioned nature. Though it is mild, but still conditioned nature is part of his engagement. But on the platform of on the liberated platform, then there is no such need. The conditioned nature has already been removed, so therefore there is no distraction. Now he can focus fully on simply hearing and chanting about the Lord's glories. This other point here, Srila Prabhupada had mentioned many times that the devotees be able to allow the spiritual master to retire. Srila Prabhupada many times had requested that the devotees take up the management. The GBC was there, temple presidents were in place, the hierarchy was there. And that he be allowed to, you know, retire and write books. So he had many, many things he wanted to do. After the Bhagavatam, then there was he was thinking of doing other literatures, Vishnu Purana, the Mahabharata, many, many different works. But the natural tendency is that if the devotees can't cooperate with each other, then the tendency is then they'll go to whoever is the highest authority. You know, it's the natural thing. Something goes wrong, the tendency is not to go to your authority, is to go whoever's the top authority. Because, of course, whatever's our problem is the ultimate problem, so it needs the ultimate authority to solve that problem. You know, not that my problem is just another ordinary problem like everybody else has, and the temple president deals with it every day, tons of them, and he's quite competent to take care of it. That's not the principle, because it's my problem, it's big. So it goes to the top. Your problem, yes, why you're not talking, why you're bothering Prabhupada with this. You just talked to the temple. But my problem, that goes to Prabhupada. So like this, if many are thinking in this way, then we see Prabhupada has kept very busy trying to organize the management. So we see in this verse that he was talking about sitting down with a few confidential devotees, and absorbing himself basically in just finishing, you know, how much writing he could do of the books like that. But we see that, I mean, as far as my observation, for Srila Prabhupada, Nirjan Bhajan was only the last day of his presence. On that day, then, he didn't speak, and he just absorbed himself in samadhi, you know, before departing, like that. Otherwise, before that, he was still preaching and managing and all these different things, trying to sort things out, make sure things would go nicely after his departure. Because right, here he's saying, now they can allow their spiritual master retire from active preaching work. Right, so he's saying is that it's all set up, now you can do that. But unfortunately, I guess this purport was missed by many. Like that. Any questions on this or comments? Or, yes.
Now I finally understand that apparent contradiction that always should be up. In Bhagavad Gita, in chapter 6, text 3, that Arura Shel Mer Gurgam.
In the yoga system, then you have this yoga ruruksu and yoga rudha. So yoga ruruksu means the first six stages up to dhyan. Dhyan and samadhi is yoga rudha. So the first six basically comprise the neophyte and madhyama platform, on which one is always engaged in activities. So that's the platform of nishkam karma yoga. But it's done through the mechanical process of the Ashtanga yoga system. So during that time, they'll be taking their bath three times a day. You know, they'll be performing their various other duties that would be appropriate for their position as Ashtanga yogis. And then when they get to the point of dhyan, where they can fully absorb themselves in meditation, then they stop all work. They don't do any more work. They simply fix themselves in one asana, and then for however long it takes for their meditation, you know, for however many thousands of years, then they don't move, they don't take their bath, they don't do their sandhya bandhana, you know, to chant their gayatri, nothing. They just absorb themselves in meditating on the Lord and chanting their mantra. So then we see is that principle is also there in the devotional process. Because the Ashtanga yoga is its source is the devotional process, that in the beginning the neophyte and the madhyama engages their senses by this yukta vairagya process in the service of the Lord. So then when they come to the point of liberation, so they come to the platform of the Uttamadhikari, then at that point there's no need to engage their material senses in the Lord's service because their mind is fully absorbed. The senses are the beginning stage to catch the mind, because the mind is connected to the senses, and the mind is thinking of the senses. So if you engage the senses in the Lord's service, the mind naturally is focused on that service. So indirectly, then it is engaged in the Lord's service. But as the mind becomes purified, where it is attracted to think of Krishna rather than the material energy, then it can be directly engaged in absorbing itself and thinking of Krishna without need of engaging the senses. Then the meaning of engaging the senses in the Lord's service takes on a different meaning, that one is not required to engage the material body in the Lord's service, because one on that platform of bhava is engaging in the Lord's service in one's spiritual body. So the senses are still being engaged. The Vaishnava culture is still being followed. The devotional activities are still being performed, but not visible on this plane. It is visible in the spiritual plane. Like we see Raghunath Das Goswami, that on this plane, he didn't engage his senses, you know, much. Something is there, but like eating. His eating was very, every other day he'd take a spoonful of Charinamrita. And that's all he would take. So then one day, Raghunath Das got sick. And he was, to most people he was unconscious, but he was actually in samadhi. And so then they were very worried. So then they called a doctor. The doctor came, checked his pulse, and said that he has a malady due to overeating. He has eaten too much rich food. So because of this, therefore he is suffering this sickness. And all the devotees said, I think you got the wrong guy. And he says, no, I mean, the scriptures, you can't go against the scriptures. The scriptures say if you take the pulse and you're getting this particular balance and this particular movement of the pulse, this means overeating. Like that. So all the devotees just shook their head. This says, this is not possible. So then after some time, then Raghunath Das came back to consciousness. And then the devotees asked him about this, that he was, manifesting these symptoms of sickness. The doctor came, he said he had overeaten, but we know that you just don't eat anything. Every other day you take a little spoon of buttermilk, and he was very, very thin and emaciated. So then he revealed that, well, actually, at that time, what I was doing is I was rendering service to Radha and Krishna, and we were feeding them this very, very nice sweet rice. And then after feeding them, then we all sat down and we ate this sweet rice. And I ate so much, I was so full. Like that, So then we can see, as though he was doing that in his sarup, in his eternal form. But it's still manifested by Krishna's arrangement in his material form. So the devotee at no time is not doing service. It's just we don't see them. It's just like the devotee serving here. And then after this, they go to another room, and they're still serving. But we don't see them serving like that. So therefore, the principle of always being absorbed is always there. But when one is liberated, there's no need to engage the material form or senses like that. So it would appear here, what Srila Prabhupada is mentioning, is that in the neophyte stage, then one will be absorbed in dynamic activities. Then in the Madhyama stage, that will continue. When one gets to the Uttama stage, if it is necessary for setting example or the preaching, one can do, but at some point in life, then one hands over the responsibilities of one's duties to others, and then sits down and performs this Nirjan Bhajan when one is on that platform of bhava. Otherwise, if not, then one should just be active until the end. Like that. Is that, yeah. Yeah. I think, yeah, something like that, 7 or 10. Yeah. Well, he had, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur had made a vow to chant 1 crore of names, so that means 10 million names. So he did 3 lakhs a day for however many years it was. But that was in preparation, so that wasn't exactly nirjan. Nirjan is where you're removing yourself. Here it was just basically the same principle, but this was to take up the preaching, to give that power behind the mission so that it had that potency. Because when you start things up, you're going to be starting with persons who aren't on that great level. So there was some, you know, background, some stock of spiritual potency. And then I think it was I don't remember what his name was, but later he became known as Tirtha Maharaj, who sat at the Chaitanya Math. So he had come. He was, you know, I'm not sure, maybe a business person or that in Calcutta. And he had come to him and said that, you know, why don't you come, and no one's preaching all these things in Calcutta. Why don't you come to Calcutta? I'll give you facility and all that. So then at that time he didn't take his offer. But when he finished chanting, then he went and showed up at his door and said, okay, I'm here, you know. So then, that's why Tirtha Maharaj, despite, you know, whatever, then he held a special position, you know, in the heart of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, because he gave the original offer and facilities to start his preaching mission. Like that. But it's be slightly different. We see Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he sat down the last 4 years and chanted, wrote like this. But that was after he had then seen Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, his determination and his success in the preaching. So then he then wrote a letter, I think in 1910, describing, you know, different things he should do, you know, that were things that he wanted to do, but that he should, you know, take them very seriously. Establishing preaching in Mayapur, opening educational institutions, doing different things like that. Is that? Yeah. Well, it's not a matter of considering yourself advanced, it's a matter of being advanced. Considering is not enough. We can consider so many things, right? You know, it's like you go out here and the guy driving by in his 4x4 truck thinks he's God. So, but that's, it's not really enough, you know? I mean, he does have a big truck, it is impressive, but it's not quite enough, you know, like that. So the consideration of being advanced isn't enough. One actually has to be. The point is this is only applicable when one comes to the platform of bhava, like that. So it's not a question of before that. Srila Prabhupada wanted to retire to write. Nirdan Bhajan doesn't mean not doing service. It means fully absorption in service, but it's not distracted by the overly having to engage the senses, the external senses and body in physical service, like that. The main thing is focusing on Krishna and writing one's realizations, because that takes great focus to do. It's despite us, Krishna Prabhupada still wrote his books. It wasn't by our assistance, it's despite us he wrote. Like that. You know, though the devotees did a wonderful job in helping once it was written, but the time, they didn't give him time to write, right? They were always busy with him. So he had to take time at night when everybody else was asleep and it was guaranteed that no one would come in to see him, that then he could write. Like that. So we see here is that Prabhupada's saying here, now they can allow the spiritual master to retire from active preaching work. Like that. Prabhupada, that's his own statement. Like that. So he's saying at this point they could do that. So this is fourth canto. So one could look at what year he was on the fourth canto, and he was of the opinion that the devotees were trained enough and qualified enough that they could carry on the active preaching work, and he could sit down to do his writing. You know, it doesn't mean that they don't see devotees don't preach, but it means that they don't have to actively always move around, because that's also, when you're older, is physically very demanding. So then, does that make sense? You know? Like Prabhupada would say many times, like you mentioned a thing for the GBC. The GBC should be preaching to devotees. And the other devotees, they should be preaching to the outside persons. Like that. Yeah. So
what the mind that one time I was really good at the problems
It's a, because the thing is spiritual. I mean, it's a common thing even today, is that the idea is the spiritual master will take care of everything, you know. But the idea is he will take care of your understanding how to perform your spiritual duties while performing whatever you're doing, your household life, your sadhana, your various preaching activities. What is the attitude? What is the inspiration? But not whether you should get married or not, whether you should get divorced or not, whether you should marry this one or that one, whether I should wear the red sari or the green sari, you know, or, you know, whether the husband should, you know, sell stickers or hats, or these aren't the things for the spiritual master to work out. You know, these are for the family members, the community, the local authorities, GBC, like this, depending. The spiritual master shouldn't have to deal with these things. He can tell you, if you want to get married, this is the attitude you should have. If you want to do business, this is your attitude. If you're sadhana, this is the attitude. You're managing, this is your attitude. This is how you see it and engage it in Krishna service. That is the duty of the spiritual master. But the other details, it's not. It's not, but that's the difficulty. I'm sure if you look in the letters, you'll see a lot of these kind of things, you know, that Prabhupada's dealing with. Some are spiritual questions, but a lot are these kind of things. So it's not important for the spiritual master to deal with these things. It's a good example. He said what it devotee asked Prabhupada, what's my nature? And he said, your nature is eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. Yes, that is His nature. Yeah. Means some simple aspects on how to understand one's nature. See, is that one has to look at many levels. The most important levels first start with is the nature of the soul. Soul is servant. That's the nature. So that means that anything else you look at must be in line with that, or how do you say it's influenced by that. So The tendency is that we take that service, but we look at it from the lower platform of our senses, so we must serve our senses. So therefore, the point of eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. That's how the conditioned soul basically tends to look at it on the bottom platform. But so service is maintained, but actually the soul's service is service to God. Service will be done. Even the most independent person who doesn't believe in God and doesn't believe in anything still has to serve their senses. So service will go on, but the nature of the soul is service to the Lord. So then that service to the senses must be service to Krishna. So then you have to see, okay, what kind of mind I have, what are its desires, what kind of intelligence I have, what kind of ego I have, and therefore what kind of senses I have. So then looking at those four, then we decide, how are those, what I have, engaged in Krishna's service? Like that. How does Krishna say this kind of sensual needs, this kind of emotional needs, this kind of intellectual needs, or this kind of ego or identity? Then how is that engaged? So then we can look at it. It means we have the aspects of, you know, then taking it another step, more detailed, then you have varnashram. So then, are we, you know, what is our age? Are we very young or very new to Krishna consciousness, where we need to learn what is Krishna consciousness? We need to, you know, figure that out. If so, then that means we should be situated in the student ashram to develop our understanding of Krishna consciousness, the practices of Krishna consciousness, and work under someone to learn to develop that service attitude. So we take that service to Krishna and practically apply it in our life as a brahmachari or as a celibate. Then after we become, you know, situated that we have a fundamental knowledge, a working knowledge, we are able to engage nicely. You know, being able to be engaged in the Lord's service is quite comfortable for us. Then we look at it. If we don't have any overly emotional needs to fulfill, you know, that we feel that women are able to, are the key in fulfilling those needs, certain emotional needs, then we can either then remain in that brahmachari ashram, because it's very simple, or one can move to the vanaprastha or sannyas ashram. Though for Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur mentioned, it's not so important to go to vanaprastha before sannyas for the brahmachari. They can go straight from brahmachari to sannyas, because their life already basically is controlling the senses and simplicity that the vanaprastha ashram would do. Though there may be more respect, they may be senior, they may take up various duties that aren't necessarily typically brahmachari life. So it's because it's more of a vanaprastha situation. You know, they may have their own some facilities, may have a position, may like that. But that can only be done if they don't need that emotional input that is gained from the grihastha ashram. If they find that emotional need is there, that sense of identity is there, then the grihastha ashram is the right situation to engage that intelligence, that mind, and that ego. Then as far as activities that you're going to do, means you have to do something, and that creates the proper prosperity of the social order. So one is either engaged full time in studying, preaching, teaching, performing ritual, you know, for the temple or for others, you know, in other words, engaged in the pancharatrik process, then that would situate one, or preaching, you know, full-time preaching, book distribution, these kind of things, that would situate one in the brahminical standard. If one is able to create administrative situations in which everybody else can therefore prosper, and be able to take responsibility to create that situation in which others then can perform their duties, both spiritually and economically, then that would situate one in the administrative duties. If one is performing some kind of business that oneself is organizing, oneself is involved in, you know, one's own capital is one is using, and from that generating income, either through land, cows, or business, whether it's very, very small or very great, one would situate oneself in that situation, you know, as a Vaishya. Or if one is assisting others, it is you are helping them in some way or another. It is their arrangement, you know, they're the responsible person. It means the buck stops with them, not with you. Then one needs to take up the attitude of someone who assists others, and then see that he does that very nicely. So that basically would situate those, one in those general situations. Then if we find within that, then you have to look at the detail. Okay, well, what is it? If it is scriptural and all, what kind of scriptures, what kind of activities, or it's administrative, what aspect of administration, or if it's business or economics, what aspect of that? What branch of business, what branch of trade, or what branch of, you know, horticulture, agriculture, you know, like this it is, or taking care of the cows. Or in the arts, what aspect is that? Is it bureaucratic? Is it, you know, assisting within the Shastric things? You know, like let's say you have an Ayurvedic doctor, you assist him by helping prepare medicines or performing massages or taking care of the people, these different kinds of things, you know, then you find yourself. Or you're helping with the administration in the bureaucratic or in the disciplinary aspects. You're helping in the business in some way, you know, either manufacturing things, selling things, supervising others who are doing these things. You know, or in the, you know, various skilled trades, fine arts, or unskilled trades, like this. Then you see which it is, and then within that, what it is. You know, if it's fine arts, is it music? Is it dance? Is it, you know, is it the visual arts? Is it the, like this? Or if it's unskilled, then, you know, you just do regular work. You carry things. You clean things. You just do the needful, like this. Then you start to just slowly get it down to seeing what it is that you're engaged in, that you're busy. But one must always keep in mind that we're dealing with a dual system here. It means when we deal with Varnashram, we deal with it, it means overlaid on the Bhagavat system. So it's not, we're not dealing with pure Varnashram separate from the chanting of the holy name. Because you have to balance a dual thing, is that because I'm chanting the holy name, then we have taken up this process of spiritual life, then we have situated on ourselves on the platform of a realized Brahman. So a Brahman performs the brahminical duties to come to the realization that I am servant of Krishna. So that has been obtained by the devotee, so by realization they're a Brahman. But that is the consciousness, that's the nature of the soul. So the soul has understood I'm a devotee, so it doesn't identify as strongly with the gross and subtle conditioned nature. But because it's not completely purified of that, it must deal with it. So simultaneously we have to deal with our consciousness as a Brahman or as a Vaishnav, and our conditioned nature that may or may not be Brahminical. So we have to balance these two. Therefore, in our pursuance of our, you know, Varnashrama duties, we have to see them in connection with our service to Krishna. Then they come into the category of Nishkam Karma Yoga, like the beginning stages of yoga. Is that? One engages in suitable activities for one's conditioned nature that nourish the development of bhakti, just like the yogi nourishes those things that will develop his meditational abilities. So those things are cultivated. So one has to be able to balance them both at once, just like Prithu Maharaj. He's both a king and a pure Vaishnava. So he has to balance his devotional life that's directly engaged in Krishna service and his conditioned nature that's indirectly engaged in Krishna service. But both he has to see are engaged in Krishna service. So for us, the identities of the Varnashram aren't so important. The ashram aspects are much more manifest because, you know, the externals of it, because of its more direct connection with spiritual activities. But the Varna aspects, while one is performing the duties and interacting with others in those duties, then it's important that everybody understands one's position in that Varna situation. If someone's the administrator, then others then take the position of following, like that. But as far as spiritual activities go, it doesn't depend upon what it is. Someone could be by, occupational duty, how he's creating his economics is through Shudra activities, but he may be every day engaged in dressing the deities, doing all kinds of things, and, you know, book distribution and all these other aspects. Because that is happening because of his consciousness as a Vaishnav who is already brahminical. But his conditioned abilities are that of a Shudra. So therefore, these things only matter when you're in the economic field. When you come to the temple, like in this environment, we don't consider who's who on that platform, except for certain administrative things like that. Okay, who's the temple president? You know, so then they lead the community in this environment like that. Then we also have then from the ashram side, then the social aspects, you know, who's initiated, who's not, who's senior to us in generation, who's senior to us in age, who's senior to us in realization or in ashram like this. Then those considerations are there like that. But that's etiquette. So from the platform of etiquette, we're dealing with those. And then, but from the economic side of the Varnashram, from the Varna side, only if we're working in that field is it considered. Otherwise, it's not considered. It's not considered outside of that. Does that make any sense? Huh? It's a big topic. Yeah, it's a big topic. That's a basic, you know, synopsis, but it is a big topic. Yeah. Yes. Like a lot of solitude. Means it's not a difficulty to find to be absorbed in solitude as long as you have active things that you can do in that solitude. You know, it's just like if you're in the home environment, you know, keeping yourself busy with things around the house or let's say translation work, editing work, or, you know, something, whatever one's doing, things on the computer, doing layouts, and something that one may be alone, but it keeps the senses and body active, you know. If one likes to be alone, one is physically active, then you're going to have something you can be alone and be out, like going out in distributing books, something that you find you can be out doing. If it's a matter of don't need to be so physically active, then you have to have something that keeps your mind busy through which senses the inclination is there. But you don't want to not be active. It's very dangerous. Because the point is here, this point of Nirjan Bhajan, is the person's very active, completely active, but not on the conditioned platform, but on the spiritual platform. So therefore, within their mind, they're absorbed in their eternal surup with Krishna, so they're fully busy, like that. But physically, they don't have to be busy. From this side, we'll look at the person, we'll see the person's in samadhi. But from if you go across the viraja, then you'll find that they're fully absorbed in activities serving Krishna and the devotees. So activity is there, that's the nature of the soul. So you just have to find something that takes care, like that. Is that okay? Any last points, sir? Yes.
Does it change sometimes as you're going?
Okay. Yeah. Does the conditioned nature change? In principle, no, but in detail, sometimes yes. Because, see, the conditioned nature has four aspects that determines it. Two of them are from the last life. It means what you did in your last life, what was your occupational duties, what was your nature in the last life. The second one from the last life is whether, you know, somebody properly performed the religious death rites, like that. If those were performed, then whatever pious or good qualities you had in the last life come through to this life cleanly. If they don't, they get kind of like caught up. It's like having a big bank balance but no bank book. So you have the money but you can't get it, like that. Like that. That's why in the Vedic system they put so much emphasis on the death rites, because that carries them on. Whatever good they have carries them on to the next life. Like that. Many times you see those that go to the forest for like this, you know, they're going to go to the forest and not come back. They perform the death rites before they leave. The Shraddha is performed, then they go to the forest, because it's done. Then however long they live in the forest, they live and then they die. So then you don't have to perform. You know, like here, Malayadvaj. The son's not there to perform the death rites. The wife, she performs, but the technical rituals aren't done. Like that. So it's already done before. Like that. Yayati Maharaj mentioned Mahabharata. He performed them before going to the forest. Like that. So then that's the second. The third is what family you're born into. Because then it will be, you can see by the consciousness of the parents are what attract the soul. So then that will have some element, but we see it's only one quarter. That's why sometimes it doesn't appear that the child is so close to the nature of the parents, because it's only one quarter of the influence. Then the fourth is the association you have, like that. So depending upon your association, you develop those kind of qualities. So I've seen myself is... because of these, you know, these elements and families are born in association, I've seen children come to the Gurukul and they're very lethargic and have the qualities of someone who's not a very developed even, you know, Shudra. With time and performing devotional service, they become purified, then they start getting spunky, active and all that, and then they're just engaged in kind of businessy activities, trading this for that, and, you know, manifesting qualities of this. With time after that, more purification is there. They start taking up, administrative duties and all this, and trying to lord it over, you know, everything in the Gurukul. And then after some time, then they come to the point where they just start absorbing themselves in deity worship and mantras and shastra and all that, and calm down. So I've seen, it's rare, but I've seen a few cases of boys go through all four. So it would just mean is their nature was the Brahminical, but because of association and other, you know, anomalies in their previous activities, it was covered. Because mode of goodness is prominent, it will manifest Brahminical duties. Mode of passion is prominent, it will manifest Kshatriya. The mix of passion, ignorance will manifest Vaishya, and ignorance will manifest the Shudra activities. So it's just a matter of mathematics of the modes of nature. You know, it's not, you know, some sentimental thing. It's that what is there is there. So the Vedic system was first be purified, be a human. Then you can see what is the varnashram nature. But if one's not pure, like as Prabhupada mentioned, you know, your nature is eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. So the impure, nature won't manifest nicely the varnashram, you know. It will be covered, just like you have tribals. You go to any tribals anywhere in the world, they have their, you know, wise people or their medicine, you know, person like that. They have their, you know, tribe leader. They have, you know, others who get things done. They have just the regular people that do what they're told. You always have, no matter what the situation, you always have these four, you know. So, you know, even you go on the job, you have all the taxi drivers, right? But you have your intellectual, philosophical taxi driver. You have the one that organizes, you know, their union. You have the other guys that just know how to make money. And you have the guys just, you know, okay, getting this taxi, okay. Like that, you always have. The four will always be manifest. So that's the thing, is that...
You mentioned that according to the modes of nature, so once one becomes a devotee, theoretically, the mode of goodness is not the pressure, but if you're coming up to the mode of goodness...
Yeah,
so
you're coming here.
It
means the body, the mind, the intelligence, the ego are in a certain pattern. So that's what they're going to be. You know, it's just like this paper. It's got Bhagavatam printed on it. So now it is spiritualized. But that same there's probably more of that stock of paper made from the same trees that is sitting there that something else was printed on. So the point is in its purified state, then the living entity is less attached to it and can engage it on its highest level, in its most pure. Just like Yudhishthira would be an example of the highest grade or purity of the Kshatriya nature. While someone like Karna, Shakuni, Duryodhana, Dushasan would be the Kshatriya nature on its lowest level. You still classify the Kshatriya. But if it went any more, then they'd turn into Vaishyas. You know, you added any more ignorance, it would be there. But so he's got the passion. The passion's enough that it's still called that, but the predominance is goodness. So you'll see also Vaishyas, very, very religious, very devotional, always engaged in pujas and this and that. But they're, good business persons like that. So it's just, you have the purified end of it, you have the less purified end of it. So that's what will happen. The main thing is we're not worried about what is the body and the mind. We're worried about what's the consciousness. So because we are focused on and attached to the conditioned nature, therefore that's why we take the conditioned nature engagement Krishna service. Right? Just like if you want to move a cow, you don't have to tie up the cow. You tie up the calf. And then pull the calf, and the cow will follow. You don't have to do anything. This big cow will follow this little calf. So the same way is that the soul will follow where you take the conditioned nature. So in the beginning, where you take the body, and then later where you take the mind, intelligence, and ego. So it will just follow. And then with time, as it becomes more purified, then it comes to the platform where it doesn't need to identify. It gives up that identity. So that's why you have to run this dual path. That's why we follow both the Bhagavat and the Pancharatrik simultaneously. Because the Pancharatrik addresses our conditioned nature. And then that's supported by the Varnashram in areas where we need. Where there's more, emotional, economic need, then it branches, it takes advantage of the Varnashram system, right? If it's not needed, it doesn't take advantage. If you're fully absorbed, your conditioned nature is fully absorbed in the Pancharatrik aspect, you don't need the Varnashram in those aspects. If you do, then you have to go. Like Pancharatra doesn't deal with marriage, Varnashram does. But so if you're doing puja all day, all that is you're dealing with Pancharatra. But when you go home and interface with the family, that's governed by Varnashram. Like that. But if you're not married, then that aspect doesn't need to be. It's not governed. It's not expanded. Does that make sense? Like when you on the computer, when you go into the thing and it goes up and you can click on that, but if you want more you go over and then it expands. If you don't need it, it stays in the thing. So that's the thing. The Bhagavat's the first one. Then it goes over into the Pancharatrik, then it goes over into the Varnashram. Like that. So that's how it functions. Yeah. Yeah. I guess last point.
Yeah,
okay.
I know that's probably not going to get into it, but as if this weren't complex enough, then we have a whole wild art of Kali Yuga. Because even just to understand what is my conditioned nature, I grew up, I was able to get good marks in school without studying, and there were a lot of books around the house and all that. Then when I became a hippie, I became a shooter.
Means while you're studying, generally that's not where you tell. You tell from what you do after. Like that. Bhaktivinoda Thakur, when they're in the school environment, you train them according to their interests and manifest nature at that point. But when they get out of the school and they actually create their own economic base, that's when you apply that now they're working within this varna or ashram. Because for the student, for all students, so many things are, like you'll find music, everybody's interested in that to some degree. Every kid wants to play mridanga, whether they can even, maintain the beat, that's another thing, but they all have interest, But some go on and maybe become professional musicians, while others it's a hobby, and others it was something they did when they were in school and they don't do it anymore, like that. So you have to be able to balance that. Then it's also, like we said, association. Amongst the hippies, then skilled trades was considered that, and some mild form of music, was considered playing an ocarina or something, was considered very noble, like that. So therefore, it's by association one takes those up. If one finds when one takes up Krishna consciousness that changes, then don't be surprised, because that was just, you know, the nice thing. You know, you made your own clothes, you know, made this and that. It was just, you know, being close to nature and being as close to, you know, close to a very pleasant, you know, pleasant furry animal as possible was, you know, it was considered very good, you know. And if you had a philosophy on it and could intellectualize on that, you know, with your 25-word vocabulary, then you're considered a guru, you know. You know, but otherwise, then it's more important to look at it. Easier is to look at what did your parents do, you know, what did their parents do, what things you like to do in Krishna consciousness, what things you were interested in as a student, you know. And then you could look at aspects, okay, within one's you know, situation before Krishna consciousness, and add that all together and look at it, you know. Then you get a more clear, we give a more clear picture. Okay? Grantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki, Jainatai Gauru Premanandi. Is there any particular thing that anyone would like to speak on, or if not, then just jump into questions or anything like that? Yes.
So, the glories of Mayapur Dham.
Glories of Mayapur Dham. That depends what you want, but otherwise that is the specialty of Jayapur Thakamara. The Dham is the energy or expansion of Nityananda Prabhu, so it's known as Janava Devi. And so then she is the Dham. So then by her grace, then, you know, one can get the mercy of Nityananda Prabhu. By his mercy, then one can get the mercy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So this is therefore the residing in the Dham or remembering the Dham. Service to the Dham is categorized as hearing about the glories of the Dham, chanting them, remembering them, and doing some service in the Dham to, you know, to beautify the Dham. So these are all elements of service there. So by that, then you can get Janava's mercy. And by her mercy, then one gets, you know, one is, does well. Just like we get the mercy of Vrindadevi, and then we are able to properly get involved in service to Radha and Krishna. So in the same way, by the mercy of Janava, then like this. So the associates of the Lord are very important in that way. Does that make any sense? So, like I said, if you want something else, then Jaipa Takamaras is the one. Beyond Varnashram. Yeah, so Lord Chaitanya is trying to gain from his discussions with Ramananda Rai. Now, Ramananda Rai is in his discussions in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, because there's five main discussions with Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, Prakashananda Saraswati, then with Rupa Sanatan, and with Ramananda Rai. So in this case, his discussion then is on Prayojana Tattva, or on the goal of life. What is the actual goal? So then, his discussion then has to be seen in that light. He's not discussing as much the process as what is the goal of the process that you're following. So, Varnashram itself is not a goal. It's a process. So it can't be, it wouldn't be the end of the discussion anyway. And of processes, it is the process of engaging our conditioned nature. Therefore, it will be listed as external, right? Because external meaning how to engage the material energy, you know, in the Lord's service. And from the point of that it's external to the direct devotional service, like that. That there is need for certain, you know, physical or emotional or economic, social needs of the living entity until they get to the transcendental platform. So then engaging those in the Lord's service, that would be Varnashram. So it's process, but it is external to the what is going on. So then, naturally, then it will go farther. You'll have to go farther. Then you get to Vaikuntha. If you go above the Varnashram system can take you to the heavenly planets if it is done with material desire. If it's performed without material desire, it will take you to the platform of liberation. If it is done to please Vishnu, then it will take you to Vaikuntha. If it is done to please Radhan Krishna, then it will take one out of this. Basically, you just deal with the liberation aspect of it. And then from there, then one takes up the process of the Raganuga Bhakti. Because the Vaidhi Bhakti can take you up to Dwarka. But the if we worship Krishna, but according to Vaidhi, then it will take you to Dwarka. So once one has gotten beyond liberation, then the platform of rag or attachment then becomes the more important element. And then, so that will be there. So within that, then then you have the five different relationships within Vrindavan. Within that, the conjugal rasa is considered the most intimate. And then of... maybe you should turn it down.
Forward.
Right, it's supposed to make things easier, right? Then within that, the conjugal rasa is the most intimate. It's the most, just the most close in that. Then within that, then you have the various different gopis that are there. You have those who are in the mood, which is